I'm Morgan Rhodes. You're listening to Heat Rocks, and I'm flying solo today. Oliver Wang will be back with us next week. Every episode, we invite a guest to join us to talk about, you know, a heat rock, a flammable, hot record, a heat-seeking missile, something combustible, a fire starter. Today, we will be deep diving together into the Luwaka Bot-produced 2013 compilation, World Psychedelic Classics 5, Who is William Anyabor? Who is William Anyabor? William Anyabor came through drippin'. Drippin' funk, drippin' Nigeria, drippin' swag. A study in reclusivity, he burst onto the scene with a synthesizer, a gang of mics, and songs about revolution, revelation, respect for your fellow man, and his own humanity. If you are new to his music, it's cool. Had it not been for Luwaka Bop's compilation in 2013, a lot of us might have been in that same position. If you have missed his contributions to Nigerian funk, African music, and the culture at large, our guest is here to fill in the blanks.
I want to realize women, they were a feeling me.
How do you feel?
I'm gonna explode.
You mean you're gonna explode?
I'm gonna explode.
To talk about World Psychedelic Classics 5, Who is William Anyabor, we invited singer-songwriter Benjamin Booker. While sometimes names escape me, I never forget a face, a lyric, or a voice. And since I first heard I Thought I Heard You Screaming in the fall of 2014, Benjamin Booker's voice has stayed with me, lingered, been one of my favorites. He was made in Virginia, but sounds like Memphis. Grits, greens, history, and experience. Soul-filled, and like the old folks say, he's been here before. Fast forward to now, and his latest album, Witness, is a study in transcendence and transparency. It's personal. And yes, sometimes the truth is heavy. But as New Spirit Helsinki once said, maybe there's only love if we're honest.
Now everybody that's broke can get the fuck on the ground. See, we thought that we saw that he had a gun. Thought that it looked like he started to run.
Honestly, I'm a Benjamin Booker fan and so glad to have him in studio. Benjamin Booker, welcome to Heat Rocks.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. And also, I could listen to you talk all day.
I appreciate that. Now, when we found out you had picked this album, Oliver and I were hyped. Hyped because it's one of our favorites, and also because it's great to be surprised by what an artist chooses. So I have to ask you, why William Anyabor and why this album?
I think that this album really started me off on a course that I'm on now, I think, making music, which is just towards making more music with electronic equipment, you know, like after hearing this record, I became like very obsessed with it for a couple of years and got into other Nigerian funk, the Funkies, Semicolon, and like other bands from Africa. And so, I just started buying a bunch of drum machines and synths and all that kind of stuff. And it just took off from there. You know, the last record that I made starts to pick up with more. It's a more rhythmic based record, you know, more grooves. But I think I'm going even further in that direction. But it all started, I think, when I heard this. It changed me. It really did.
Now, no conversation about William Anyabor is complete without mention of him being a recluse.
Mm.
And the fact that before this compilation, he was largely unknown to the masses. How did you come to hear about him and this album, and where'd you find it?
I think I heard this album the same way everybody did. I was traveling around a lot at the time, though, too. And I think that the time that this album came out, it was definitely, I think, bigger in London and like those kinds of places. Like they were playing it at clubs and stuff like that, and just parties when you went out to bars and things. So I was hearing it there out and about when I was just like, who is this? Like over and over again. But then my manager finally, he got a copy of the record, just like a promotional copy, and gave it to me. And I was just like, man, like.
Were you blown away, like, Love at First Listen?
Love at First Listen. Seriously, just, like, really Love at First Listen. Because I was into, like, funk and getting really into funk, but I liked the more, like, chilled out funk, like the Sly and the Family Stone, like, Fresh, There's a Ride Going On, like, that kind of stuff was what was interesting me. If you listen to a song like Truth is Heavy, like, the drums on that song off my last record, it's, like, I was really coming from, like, that kind of vibe. I'm not going anywhere. Come to me with any problem. There ain't nothing. And then when I heard this, it's just like, it's laid back funk, but just like really trippy, you know, and like, I loved it. I fell in love with it.
Now, I have to be honest, I sort of gravitated towards this project on the strength of the cover art alone. I saw a distinguished looking brother, you know what I'm saying, with an African surname, a white cowboy hat. I was like, yo, I have to know what this is, right? And the first song I heard was Body and Soul.
Yes.
And I was like, good Lord, this is fire.
Right.
When I play my kind of music,
and it's not just the music, I mean, but the messages from this man. Like, when I think about William Onyebor, I think, because, I mean, we don't know much about him, but I think about him being that kid, that friend that you have, or the kid in the back of the class who doesn't say a lot, but, like, when they say something, it's, like, important, you know? And he was a recluse, yes, but, I mean, like, the stuff that he's saying on this record is crazy, you know what I mean? It's really, it's for the people, it's for the world. Like, he's speaking to the world when he's talking.
And in fact, he said in an interview, he had an interview, one of his very rare interviews he had with a reporter named Lauren Laverne.
Oh, you know, from Lauren BBC.
From BBC, yeah. Right? And she said, he said to her, I only wanted to compose music for the world.
Wow.
And so to your point, that's what he wanted to do. I mean, that's just so funky and so and so self-assured about what his art is, what his music is.
Yeah.
Now Nigerian music is a hybrid soup of sounds in general.
Mm-hmm.
You got high life, you got Afrobeat, funk, rock. And while his music sort of draws upon those influences, it's distinctly different.
Mm-hmm.
For me, what makes it different is that it's super electronic and dancey.
Uh-huh.
In your opinion, what was different about his music than some of the bands that you mentioned or some of Nigerian music in general?
Well, it's exactly that. I think that he used, there's a synth called a Polymoog, which I've tried to find, but you can't find it's anywhere really to buy it. But he used that, and I mean, he had a bunch of keyboards that he brought. People don't really know where he got them from. Some people say that he had investors from Russia, that he had made money as a businessman. Like, he kind of had, like, a bad reputation in town as just being, like, a sketchy dude. But he had all, like, this really expensive equipment, which, like, nobody in Africa had. And he was just making music that, for thousands of miles around him, he was the only person doing anything like that. And it's just, as much as I like the music, I think the story is just so inspiring of just this man on his own, really on an island, on his own.
Sure. And on the cover of Atomic Bomb, I saw it on a single, yo, it's just him, and he's got like 7 or 8 microphones.
What is he doing?
Nas says all he needs is one mic. William Onyebor needed a gang of mics. So he's in the studio, he's got his keyboards. I don't know where he got some of this equipment. Now, the rumor is he went to Stockholm.
Oh.
But everyone's like, well, where'd you get the money to go to Stockholm? Not only did he build his own studio, but he had his own pressing plant.
Wow.
So he's way ahead of his time in terms of production and what's going on then.
Wow.
I think the distinction between some of the other sounds that we mentioned is that synth, which I don't hear so much on some of the other.
But also the arrangements. We're talking about, I guess, the beginning of like dance music in that kind of stuff, you know, house is coming in and like all these other genres are coming in. And just like these drawn out songs, these 8-minute long songs you're hearing like proto like dance music, you know what I mean? Just like the beginning of that.
One of my favorite songs. I mean, we're going to go through this album, and it's hard for me to pick favorites. So if I say one of my favorites and I say it again, it's because how do you choose one? But one of my favorites is Love is Blind.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
dancey, and parts of it to me sound like Anita Ward's Ring My Bell. It's just to me a Love Is Blind is a slowed down version to me of
I definitely hear what you're talking
yeah.
about.
Yeah. So that to me is what makes it stand out, is because it to me it's very African.
Mm.
But also it's very American disco, some of the stuff that was happening
right.
then. Can you talk to me about what appeals to you about the production on this album and some of the arrangements?
It's not very wild. I mean, it's pretty minimal, the music on the album. It's not a lot going on. And a lot of the instruments are flat. There's not like a lot of reverb and all those things. But it still feels like very psychedelic and kind of just like trippy. You know what I mean? And I think that that comes from the playing and just the production, what we're talking about, just like all of the sounds, like every sound that you're hearing, the drums, the bass, the synths, it's just all so warm. And just like you can tell that somebody has like taken care to really spend time making sure that it sounds good.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
And the 70s was one of my favorite eras for production. And I think that it's just, this is an example of that.
What else did you like around that time?
Well, we talked about Sly earlier, and also, I mean, like Neil Young records and things like that that came out at the time. They're just, it's just, I think after the 60s was like a little too rough for me, the recordings. In the 80s, it gets a little too out of control. But like in the 70s, it was a nice sweet spot where everything, it feels good. It feels very organic and natural, I think.
Does that have to do with how things are produced or the sorts of instruments? What do you credit that to?
I think it's the sorts of instruments. People are still using a lot of analog equipment and things at the time. And I think technology had just peaked at the time. I think that there's definitely now, I mean, I'm definitely not one of those people who's like analog all the way. But
sure. sure.
But I think that it just, there is just something that feels very natural about this, you know. And you know that that's what he was using, is just like tape machines and things to make this. You know?
And that's what's so wild about this, is we only know about him.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know who his background singers were necessarily. We don't know who else was in there with him. I think he kept that stuff sort of shrouded in mystery.
Yeah.
And speaking of that, here's a man that basically recorded 8 or 9 albums in about the same amount of time. And then he disappears to pursue a life of faith, mm-hmm. which turns the whole notion of you need to be in the scene to mm-hmm. be relevant on its head.
Mm-hmm.
Here's someone who largely grew to prominence after he had already, you know, gone to this life. I like the song Heaven and Hell, speaking of that, because that's where he hints at where he's going.
Yeah.
And it doesn't sound like anything else on the album. He's doing his own vocals. There's also a little bit of a foreshadowing of, here's a man that's spiritual. I don't think we knew then. That was 1977 when that was recorded, that he was going to slip out.
I will tell him how you treat me. If you treat me with love and kindness, I will beg him to send you home to heaven.
Heaven, the best place for comfort.
Now, you mentioned earlier that we don't know much about him, but from that, I was able to sort of, you know, learn that he was a very spiritual man and was forward-thinking spiritually. What did you learn about William Onyebor listening to this album or some of the songs?
Well, from that song in particular, going back to the recluse kind of loner, kind of just like somebody from what I've heard, like didn't go to parties, didn't socialize with people, didn't talk to people. That song, I feel like it was just somebody who probably had just experienced it, like some traumatic things in his life. He talks about in that song, like, if you treat me the way you treated Jesus, I will beg him to send you all to hell, like that kind of stuff. But I think that he's just somebody who just saw the world when you listen to these songs in just like a very simplistic kind of way, where it's just like, I want to be a good man. Don't lie to me. He talks about in these songs, like, I want a woman who's going to be faithful. Like he just wants, like, he seems like a simple man. And I think that faith probably maybe later on brought that to him, you know.
Sure.
All of those things lined up when he probably found that. But it seems like he was tortured before that, maybe a little bit.
Sure. And might have been in large part to the war that was going on.
Right. 67 to 70, they had the Nigerian Civil War. The Biafra Republic declared its independence. And yeah.
might have scarred him based on what he's seen. And if you listen to Why Go to War, which is, I'm going to say this again, one of my favorites.
That's probably one of my favorites. It's hard to pick, though, but that's probably one of my favorites.
Tell me why you lie to go to war. Every time war. You want a small box to die for you. Innocent souls are killed every day. Tell me why you lie to war.
But we always ask, because it's so hard to pick, what the fire track is on there for you. Is it going to be, you have a chance to change your mind.
I'm going to say for real, it's something you will never forget. I'm going to say it has to be the number one. You know, now that I think about it, I mean, the recording sounds like very claustrophobic. Like it sounds like it's recorded in a small space, you know, a closed room. And I think that probably is an extension of his personality. You know what I mean? It's not big sounding drums and guitars and things.
Sure.
It's like very like somebody who spends a lot of time indoors, you know.
I mean, that song to me is one of my favorites, but I think tempo wise, I'm attracted to Fantastic Man.
Right.
I like this song because it's light.
It's very light. It's pretty disco-y, yeah. I like it because I mean, I don't know much about Africa, but I mean, the friends that I have from Africa, it seems very, like, African. I don't know. He's just, like, this lady is just, like, he's like, why can't you tell me how good I look, like, sometimes, you know? Like, I don't know. It is a good vibe. And you can't, if you've ever tried to cover these songs, I don't know if you have, but just without the accent, it doesn't work. It's just, like, this attitude that goes along with, like, what he's saying and, like, the accent and everything.
It's all together.
It's a good vibe, yeah.
Since I came to know you, baby, I've been telling you how good you are. I've been telling you how sweet you are. I've been telling you how.
We'll be back with more of our conversation with Benjamin Booker on World Psychedelic Classics 5, Who is William Onyebor? After a brief word from a couple great Max Fun podcasts. Don't go anywhere.
Look at me, my girl, look at me.
Well, Adam, we're still putting out the Greatest Discovery podcast while we wait for season 2.
What are we doing with these episodes?
We've talked to a whole bunch of interesting people, like The Wall Street Journal's Ben Fritz and MaximumFun.org's own Danielle Radford. We're kind of using this time to find ways to entertain ourselves and you while we wait for the next season.
So catch yourself up with Star Trek Discovery and join us Tuesday on The Greatest Discovery. It's on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
In a world dominated by dude bro movie podcasts. A world where Casey Affleck has an Oscar and Angela Bassett does not. Only one podcast is brave enough to call bullshit. Who Shot Ya? With Ricky Carmona.
A lot of people don't know Porgs, Puerto Rican.
Alonzo Duralde.
I would eat oak jaw.
April Wolf.
I want to interrupt and say that the fish man was real sexy.
Drea Clark.
I have a real soft spot for King Kong.
And women of color.
I was like, damn!
Right, Kugel got final cut.
Kugel got final cut?
It's literally the world's saddest orgy. And believe me, I'm from San Francisco. I've been to some sad orgies.
Who Shot Ya? Listen every Friday on Maximum Fun or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on Heat Rocks. talking William Onyebor and the compilation album World Psychedelics Classics 5 with Benjamin Booker. Is there a song on here that you would like to see covered or you'd cover yourself?
I would cover any of these songs, but I think that the one that I could probably do the best is probably Heaven and Hell. So maybe in the future I'll get it going.
Take it on? Maybe. Same tempo or?
It's hard to argue with the tempos on this album. So probably the same tempo. That's one thing that I like about it. And one thing that was also intriguing to me is just the, in the late 70s and like the early 80s, just the idea of just like these tempos that can go on for forever. Because you really don't get tired of them.
No.
Of any of them. And he can just go on and on, you know.
And I think synth music, all synth music in the 70s and the 80s wasn't cool. Some of it was corny. Mm-hmm. This was not corny, right? And I think because of the aforementioned elements that you had the funk, you had the rock, you had that true Nigerian sound, mm-hmm. and you had these vocals and you had these lyrics that were way, to me, way ahead of what else was going on there.
Right.
It is hard to pick, you know, a sleeper track on here because all these to me are fire. That's just my own personal opinion.
Good. I like Good Name also just for the subject Ooh. Matter. It's just like a, and that's another thing that I think also just points to his personality because he's talking about the idea of just like somebody losing their good name and just like the importance of keeping one. You know what I mean? It's just like, what was his experience with that in the town that he lived in? Because you know that a lot of people in the town didn't feel good about him. There was a rumor that he wasn't paying somebody that was working for him and that they came over to get the money and he chased him away with a pistol. And then when the guy came back with the police, the gun was gone and the boy got sentenced to jail. And he was just seen as like a bully in the town, like somebody who was just like, but I mean, there's also people who said that he was a nice man and they didn't have problems with him. But I think that that's probably something that works its way into the music, you know?
Sure. Good Name is, am I going to go out on a limb and say that it is my absolute favorite?
Ooh.
I'm going to go out
You've
on a limb.
You've said this like six times.
I know.
Don't sell your conscience. Don't sell your conscience. There's no money, no money, no money, no money, no money. You can buy your name. Good name is better than silver and gold. There's no money, no money, no money, no money.
I'm going to go out on a limb. And here's why I like Good Name, okay? This is a standout for me. Obviously, I'd take nothing away from him, but Good Name reminds me of something else. It reminds me of Blue Monday, New Order.
You are right. Wow.
Right?
I wonder if it's the same drum machines.
You know, when I hear that, I'm expecting William Onyebor to come out with something cool and light, but it's so similar to me, and that's why that's one of my favorites. I love dance music. I grew up on dance music in the 80s, and that one just had an appeal to me sonically. Anything that jumped out to you differently about this album, listening to it in preparation for this conversation? Did you pick up on anything you might have missed first time around? Or any new insights into the album or the man himself?
Or the man himself. Doing some research about him, it's just, you can't find anything about him. You can't. But I think that that's part of the reason why I'm so attracted to it. You know, I love the Arthur Russells, the Daniel Johnstons, like those kind of people. And I think that he's, you know, one
in
of
that
the,
category.
Those people. Yeah, for yeah. sure. But his music is, it's weird because it's outsider music that it just appeals to everybody. You know what I mean? That's what's so crazy about it. Those people, I don't think can reach as many people, you know.
Well, you know, a lot of people in Nigeria were aware of him, but elsewhere, right. I think Luwaka Bop, I think is a small label in New York, mm-hmm. and they had to track him down to try and get these tracks released and to get them on this compilation.
Right, yeah.
But thank God that they did, because I wouldn't have heard it. I bought the compilation on Bandcamp.
Oh.
And so I was just like, what is this? And oh my God.
I think that if somebody was playing this music now, like if there was a band playing this music now, that they would be huge.
This kind of music or just covering these songs?
Playing this kind of music.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Just like this. I think people could use this right now, this kind of music, you know.
How has having this experience with this album or listening to this album, how has it affected you as an artist? Did it influence any of your work on Witness or otherwise?
Yeah, definitely on Witness, talking earlier about the drums, and just like there's a song called Overtime, which definitely has like a little bit of a vibe from William Onyebuor. I think like the first time that I played that song for my bass player, she was like, "You've definitely been listening to a lot of But I mean, yeah, like I said earlier, just buying a bunch of equipment and just getting more into electronic music and just seeing that you can have soul in electronic instruments, you know.
Do you think that his music is electronic with a side of soul or soul with a side of electronica?
I think it's electronic with a side of soul. I think that he really was somebody who was passionate. You have to make this kind of music and do the programming that he did and just like record like this. I think that it's, you have to be passionate about it to do it. You know what I mean? It takes a lot of time and effort.
I am really blown away by someone, you know, recording these types of hits and then just walking away.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's reported that he only did a couple of interviews, maybe two, and didn't want to tour, didn't want to perform afterwards. And I think that might have secured his legend. I don't know if he was still performing, if we'd still revere him the same way.
Mm-hmm.
How difficult is it for artists to take a break?
Well, I know it's not hard for me to take a break. But for some people, it's harder to take a break. I like taking breaks. I mean, some of my favorite people, I mean, I'm one of those people who's like, I share with my friends all the stuff that I like make daily that's like not very good that I just like send out, you know. But I mean, I put out stuff to other people that's good and that I believe in. And like, I like people like D'Angelo. It's like, he put out a record like 15 years in between. But he's like, I'm going to put it out when it's good. You know what I mean?
Right. A Sade, every 9 years.
Yeah.
She comes around and she drops it on us and it kills.
Fiona Apple's another one of those people. Like, I mean, I like that kind of stuff. So the taking the break thing isn't a big deal for me. And I think that the thing that I love about him is that it does seem like he was making music because he liked making music, and it wasn't to get famous. But I don't know. Even when they came back recently to when he's been getting more popular, I mean, he still didn't want to do interviews really that much. So.
Right. I'm just so glad that I found this music. I mean, I was already into Nigerian music, particularly Lejidu Sisters. I was like,
ooh.
What? You know, yeah. You're just
life's
so
gone down low. That song is ridiculous.
Baby, life's gone.
But it's just the experience of, like, thank God for some of these compilations that you mentioned, the psych rock, the funk, because you're just like, you feel like, where have you been? But thank God you are where you are.
Yeah.
But so discovering this for me was wonderful for the dance element, because I just didn't know that side of Nigerian music. I knew the rock side. I knew the soulful side.
Yeah.
I love African music in general, fellow fan. But I just was like, this was an experience for me that was really, really, really wonderful. If you're introducing someone to William Onyebuor's music,
mm-hmm.
and this album in particular, if you want them to know the spirit of this album and the spirit of this man as an artist, which song do you start with from here?
I think I got to go Heaven and Hell Again. I think I got to go Heaven and Hell Again. Sorry, there's only 10 songs. But
no, there are only 10, yeah.
I think I got to go with that song. I just, to me, I mean, all of these songs feel like right up my alley, but that just feels like I don't know. I like the soul of that song, I guess. If I can describe it like that without sounding ridiculous. So.
That's a good call. I mean, I like Heaven and Hell because of the spiritual element. Of course, I grew up in the church, so it has a lot of resonance for me. And also, I like the foreshadowing of it, is that we didn't know then that he was going to step away from the entire scene to pursue a long life of faith. I think if I had to start someone off with one of these songs, it would be Let's Fall in Love. Because I think you can see his heart there.
Mm-hmm.
And there are so many other themes on here. War, being yourself, spirituality. And Let's Fall in Love is something that that surprised me on this album, but I would like to hear it.
I guess, I mean, Why Go to War was pretty important to me, too. Going into the last album and just thinking about talking about more things that were happening around me and those kinds of things. Because it is, I mean, you don't want to, you just don't want to be preachy, you know what I mean? You don't want to do that. But I mean, like, I don't know. I don't feel like he was doing that with this song. It didn't feel like that at all. It felt like he was genuinely just, as a human being, just being like, you know, what's going on here? People, come on.
Exactly.
And if you come at people like that, I don't think that they mind it. I think that they're just, it's, you're just connecting with them, you know what I mean?
And you're able to slip in that message,
yeah.
I think, based on his tempo.
Right.
It doesn't feel like you have like a backpack of sentiment,
right.
Because it's so up-tempo and it's light that
right.
forces you to listen to the lyrics, but it doesn't bury you
right.
Under the lyrics. Are there any songs that you, any particular song that you skip over when you listen to it again, or do you listen to everything? Songs that you may not have given enough time and as much time to.
Love is Blind was one of those songs. That's why I said it was one of the
sleepers.
The sleepers. It's because, yeah, it doesn't have a, it sounds different, just the recording quality, than some of the other songs.
How so?
I think it sounds a little bit more lo-fi than the other songs, doesn't it? Maybe I'm crazy. I don't know.
You're not crazy.
And just like it doesn't have like that driving, like, I don't know, it felt a little different than the other ones. But I mean, coming back to it and then listening to it and then hearing that like string kind of like synth sound that comes in, it's like this is also a good song.
Classic material. So we have to ask, as we ask all of our guests, if you had to describe this album in three words, what would they be?
Soulful space funk.
That's good. That's good. That's three. That's good.
All right. There we go.
That's good. That's good. That's good.
It would be so cool to just, I hope it just gets more popular and that there's like a wave of kids who just like start these bands like this.
Oh, that'd yeah,
be,
yeah.
That'd be incredible.
A hybrid of sounds.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to hear a DJ drop in.
Yeah.
One of these jams. For me, it'd have to be Fantastic Man, because that gets me so hyped.
You look so good, Fantastic Man.
We've been sitting down with Benjamin Booker and talking about this precious compilation put out by Luwaka Bop in 2013, World Psychedelic Classics 5, Who is William Onyebor? And we've been so glad to have you in studio talking about one of our faves. Thanks for bringing one of our faves.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Folks, it's okay if you don't bring one of our faves, but if you do bring one of our faves, you win. His latest album is Witness. I urge you to check it out. Can you let people know where they can find you socially and otherwise, social media and otherwise?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Benny Bookmarks. And I don't know. I don't really keep up with Facebook anymore. So.
No shade. I don't either. And check for...
Sorry, Mark.
And check. We might just get some cover of Love is Blind or one of these other gorgeous tracks from Benjamin in the future.
You've been listening to Heat Rocks with myself, Oliver Wong, and Morgan Rhodes. Our theme music is Crowned Ones by Thess One of People Under the Stairs. Shout out to Thess. Heat Rocks is produced by myself and Morgan, along with Shana Deloria and Christian Duenas. This episode was engineered by Shana and edited by Christian. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher, and executive producer is Jesse Thorne. We are part of the Maximum Fun family, taping every week live in their studios in the world and psychedelic Westlake neighborhood of Los Angeles. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Heat Rocks Pod. You can find a link to our Facebook group on our webpage at heatrockspod.com. That's where we will post show notes for every episode, including a track listing of everything you've heard today and other goodies. Again, that's at heatrockspod.com. We want to thank all of our 5-star iTunes reviewers. We've gotten a couple of new ones in the last week, including Super Busy,
on you, TJ, and one turntable. You should go out and get that second turntable, one turntable. If you haven't a chance yet, please consider leaving us a review. It is such a big way in which we can build our audience, and folks can find us on iTunes.
We also wanted to thank our social media fans out there, including at Real Love Punk. Shout out to Real Love Punk. We also want to thank Stacey Molsky. I didn't know Christian's Twitter was at Butts on a Butt. Let's talk about that later. We also want to thank we want to thank Chris B. Chicken. We also want to thank Greg's Wiki. We do so appreciate the Tweezies and the Retweezies. Good to see you, Oliver.
Good to see you too, Morgan. And one last thing. Here is a teaser from next week's episode, which is a July 4th special featuring just Morgan and I talking about the heat rock variations on the Star Spangled Banner.
Oof, don't miss it. I always worry when someone starts singing it, wherever they start. If they start too high, I'm like, you're going to get hung. Because once you're up there, it is, if you don't start in your low register, or whatever note that is that means low register, you have a long way to go and a short time to get there. And no pressure. There's just thousands of people looking at you. But I've seen that go badly.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.